Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com. Free Talk Live.
Free Talk Live on this Wednesday evening, 603-283-6160. If you would like to join in on the conversation, that's 603-283-6160. With you in the studio tonight, it's Aria,
Nikki,
and Bonnie.
And man, it feels like it has been forever since I sat here in this chair, I mean, especially on a Wednesday, but I mean, it kind of has. I've been busier than normal for the last few months since my former job reopened. They got me back working, you know, 50 plus hours a week. And some days they just don't have anyone else who is capable of doing the different tasks that I can do. And I end up having to stay late or doing a completely different job. It's just been chaotic. And of course, today I wasn't sure whether or not I was going to be able to make it because my car happened to be in the shop with a belt that was squealing and just making god awful noises. I thought the whole belt was going to have to be replaced. Apparently, all they had to do was tighten it.
So it's already back?
Yeah. Right. I got it back this afternoon. Thankfully, it was looking like it wasn't going to happen because they didn't call me, right? And usually, in my experience with this mechanic, is they're going to call you quickly and they're going to let you know, hey, your car is ready. If they don't call you, it means your car is not ready. But me being impatient, I was like, hey, you know, guys, Got a life to live here, and you got my car. And ultimately, they did end up calling me back, and that was all squared away. So thank goodness for that. And then I was like, oh, crap. But I still may not be able to do the show because I've got this other thing at 5 o'clock today that I completely forgotten about until my attorney emailed me this afternoon with a document, a motion to continue my sentencing, which was scheduled for January the 26th. Presumably, it's going to get pushed back. The judge has not signed off on it. So as of right now, so this thing is still taking place on January 26th, but the prosecutors have assented to this motion, which means they're fine with it getting pushed back, and my attorney wants to push it back for various reasons, and we suspect that it's probably going to get pushed back to like mid-March or something like that, and I'm not super happy about it. It sucks, you know? Having this sword of Damocles, because if ever, that's an analogy that I've always used. The sword of Damocles was, I think, obviously from Greek mythology, it was this guy who pissed off Zeus, as a lot of people did back then. So Zeus tied him to a rock under a tree with the sword hanging over him, you know, wafting in the breeze. And at any given time, that sword could fall. And
the uncertainty.
Right. Except in this particular case, I happen to know when that sword is going to fall. And that really doesn't make things any better. It's just like, I also know I'm going to die one day, right? But I don't know when that is, so it's far removed from me, and it's not something that I spend any time thinking about. However, this, especially as it gets closer, I know that sword is going to fall on that day.
But to make it sort of Damoclesy, it's like, you know it'll fall, but you don't know if it's going to land next to you. Or on you.
Right. There are
and that's what's so annoying.
There's a large number of questions about, you know, what exactly the sentencing will be. It could be prison, right? It could end up in prison for 36 months, and I don't want to go to prison. Don't get me wrong. God knows I don't want to go to prison. However, if I'm going to have to go to prison, I'd rather go ahead and go and get that clock ticking, right? I'd rather not put it off for 2 months and then get released 2 months down the later because the anxiety of waiting. I know prison's not pleasant, but like, how much worse could it be than having the prospective prison sentence just perpetually in the back of your mind 24/7 to the extent that for the last week or so, and I suspect it's only going to get worse as the sentencing gets near, I've been having dreams about the sentencing, like every single night, some sort of dream about the sentencing or the trial or something, because it's just always there.
It's like you can't plan anything. You can't, like, you know, change anything about your life because you have this other thing that's almost like a obligation, but it's even worse than that. It's a forced obligation that you don't want to do coming up It's so annoying.
That's exactly. And there's so much planning I need to do, right? Like, in regard to Free Talk Live and in regard to my other job and what's going to happen with my cats and my dogs if I'm not there for a year or 2 years or 3 years. There's so much planning that I need to do that I'm working on doing, but I don't know what is going to be an option and what isn't going to be an option. There's so many questions that, as you pointed out, it's just impossible to plan around, and it could go horrifically badly, right? Worst possible outcome is sentenced to prison 36 months, arrested then on the spot, which would suck. But if that happens, you know, what contingency, what plans can I put in place now that will go into effect then to keep things going? It's a complete mess, and I was not looking forward to sentencing. Don't get me wrong. No one ever looks forward to something like that. But I was the dread of, I was awaiting the moment when the dread of it was no longer hanging over me, where I knew one way or another whether the coin was going to land on heads or tails, where I no longer had to guess, bam, there it is, deal with it. And now it's getting pushed back for 45 to 60 more days, which, you know, I agreed with my attorney about. It's necessary for, you know, our defense. But, man, is it difficult.
Just must be so annoying to have your fate held in someone else's hands. Like, I can only imagine
annoying.
How frustrating that is.
It's not annoying, but it's freaking terrifying. I mean, to all extent. I mean, to some extent, all of us have our fates held in someone else's hand, right? When you're driving home, your fate is effectively being held in the hands of other drivers on the road.
That's true.
One of them could be a psychopath and could just decide it's time to T-bone you. However, this is a bit more direct than that, because you are right. The judge effectively has the opportunity here to say, yes, Arya, I think you should go to prison for 36 months. Or
I really don't think that's going to happen, though.
But we don't know, right? I hope it's not going to happen, but I don't know that it's not going to happen. And I can't know that it's going to happen. No matter what I say or do or whatever logic I come up with or whatever legal precedents I look at or this example or that example or hear this argument from my attorney or that argument from my attorney or this argument from the prosecutors, it all, as you pointed out, comes down to one person making a decision.
Even if you hear anything positive, like, oh, this judge actually showed leniency in this example, it's only like a fleeting, like, oh, that's good, and then it's immediately like, but it could go bad. So it's the same thing with Ian. Like, it's just like, anytime there's like, oh, there was good news, that there was this happened throughout the last 2.5 or whatever years of my life, it's been like, oh, that's good. And then it's immediately like, it might not even matter at all, you know? And turns out it doesn't, because juries are just piles of idiots.
Well,
scooped out of a giant bucket of idiots that is New Hampshire.
I don't know why the jury did what they did, right? And, you know, there was no jury in my particular case because I pled guilty to operating an unlicensed money transmitting business. But, I mean, people always have their reasons, and without being able to find out, without being able to ask the jury why they felt that, because that would have been nice, right? If instead of just saying guilty, they have to write an essay or maybe a page about why they think the person was guilty. I would appreciate that from an accountability standpoint.
Yeah, right. Some sort of statement.
I mean, they didn't even have to show their faces the whole time.
Yeah, that's
it's
true.
It's not right. It's like, I have the power to put you in prison. I don't even have to, like, show my whole identity, which is part of your face.
Yeah, but be all of that as it may, as you point out, Nikki, ultimately this will come down to the decision of one person. I suspect there's an appeal process, like if the judge was like, oh, you know what, 36 months in prison isn't enough for you, life sentence. You know, there's an appeal process there, but appeals are slow. And if I get sentenced, you know, three years in prison or whatever, by the time I run that appeal through, I'll probably be released anyway. I don't know. But it sucks having a hang over your head, and it's not annoying to have my fate being decided, you know, in prison. It was 21 days from now, or 22 days from now, prior to, you know, about 5 hours ago. But it's terrifying knowing that this one individual gets to make that decision. And I do feel better in having interacted with this judge in the past and having seen this judge be Not at all what I would expect of a federal judge, right? Most of my experiences with federal judges is like reading the news, and there are people like the judge who oversaw the Ross Ulbricht case, and they're 100%, they don't care about anything, they're going to railroad you, and that's it. You're guilty, they don't care about anything else. As soon as they look at you, you're guilty, and they want to put you in prison for life. This judge has not been that.
It's weird. I think the federal judges are just better than state judges. I don't know what it is, because I've had to go to two different federal judges in Utah, and they were just like, I walked away the first time, just like, dang, that guy's awesome. Like, I like him. Like, I mean, technically, I still got freaking, like, in Punisher or Victimless Crime, but it was just like, he wasn't, like, just like, doing whatever the prosecution said, and the prosecution wanted so much BS from him. He like yelled at him and told him he was being stupid, and then gave me a lighter sentence or whatever. And then the one after that was just like really like, let me just sit there and tell my story to him. And this judge is just like probably the least cool of the three that I've seen, but still 10 times cooler than any state judge that I've seen, which I've seen tons. I mean, not personally, I've never been in state court myself, but I've been in the court room. Right. Watching, like, I don't know, probably like 10 or 20 state ones, and they all suck in New Hampshire.
This judge is certainly better, and it was a difficult situation for me, right? Because I recognized the religious trappings of the court system and the U.S. system, and the whole process of standing for the judge and all of that.
So weird.
It's so weird, and it's so religious. It violates my religious rights and my religious beliefs.
It's like a cult.
Yeah. To have to stand there and honor this robed figure, that this priest, right? It violates every aspect of my worldview. However, I respect this judge because, well, the first time of ever being in this judge's courtroom, I went in business casual, just like my attorney told me, but it was a sleeveless business casual, and the judge was not happy about that. He said, you wear sleeves in my courtroom. I don't remember exactly how he said it, but he called me out there in the federal court in front of everyone. I was so taken off guard because out of everything I expected that day, that was not among the things I expected.
Yeah, and you were observing from the crowd, not like on the stand or something.
Right, I was just out there in the crowd. I don't remember why I was there. Oh, it was for, I think it was for Renee's sentencing.
Yeah.
And luckily, my attorney was there, so he asked to approach, and he explained to the judge, hey, look, this is Arieta Mesa. She's my client. She's trans, so that she's not here in, like, a tank top, as it would appear. This is actual business casual, and this is actually appropriate. And then my attorney came and sat back down. Things proceeded as normally. And then at the end of the sentencing hearing, the judge, in front of the entire courtroom, Judge LaPlante, apologized to me for the situation that happened.
You know, and I've seen him do that before as well, where he kind of scolded somebody, like called somebody out in front of the whole courtroom. And then, you know, a little bit later, he's like, you know what? Sorry.
Yeah, and it was absolutely remarkable to... I mean, it's not easy to say I was wrong and to apologize to someone in the first place, right? That's not easy to do, even if you're a no one. I work with people all the time who can't admit that they were wrong, that I put they put the wrong toppings on a pizza. It's something that trivial. They can, but here's a federal judge with all of the powers inherent in that station, right? He's as close to being a king as one can be in the United States. You know, he's got all manner of power. He can point at someone in that crowd and have them arrested under the powers of contempt of court. He has wide powers in that courtroom. And despite that, he still managed to maintain enough humility to reflect on his own actions and say, you know, I was wrong in this scenario, I jumped to a conclusion. I don't remember exactly how he phrased it, but he was like, he didn't have all of the facts about me being trans, and he apologized. It was absolutely not at all what I would expect from any judge, much less one that was presiding over a federal court. And for that reason alone, yeah, I respect him. But I respect him as an individual, as a person. That doesn't make it any easier for me to stand up for the judge in that religious ceremony.
Well, because you wouldn't do that for other random people that you respected, right? Because it's just a weird thing.
Right. When my attorney and I talked about all of this, he was like, "What? You've already told me you respect the judge, so what's the problem?" I was like, well, I respect him as an individual because, yes, that absolutely earned my respect. Being able to say I was wrong and apologize for that, that's not meaningless. That's a huge thing that most people can't even do. So that earns my respect, but it doesn't earn my reverence or my worship, which is what the act of standing up for the judges has become in the United States.
I don't know about your experience, but in all my experience of being in church, you would be told, please stand, and it wouldn't be for the pastor. It was like, please stand, and then we're going to do the next thing, like praising God. It was like standing for God. Like, you weren't just standing for the pastor. I never remember, like, somebody being like, and now Pastor so-and-so is coming on the stage, please clap. You know, like, please stand. It was never about him. He would ask you to stand so we could do the next, like, singing or praying or whatever that was, like, for God.
So what's worse, standing for the judge or standing for the state? Right? Because that's the equivalent to God in this case.
Well, I mean, that's effectively what you're doing when you're standing for the judge, right? You're standing up not for that
individual. He is the court.
If it was just standing up for the individual, right, you know, an individual that I respect enters the room, I'm going to stand up and, you know, shake their hand or whatever, if that, all things being equal. But when you stand up for a judge, you are standing up for the court and the state and the whole religious apparatus, as Bonnie points out. The court is the state. So I'm not sure that you can stand for the judge without standing for the state. I think it's one and the same. I don't remember why we ever stood up in church, right? I was a little kid then, but there, you certainly did, right? Everyone came in and you sat down, and then I think there was singing in these Southern Baptist churches, and then at some point someone would say or lead the way in standing up, and I don't remember why. And I don't remember if then you would continue to stand and sing, or if you just waited on the pastor to come in and then he would tell you to be seated.
What's interesting to me that I remember very clearly about, like, every church I've been to, and I only went to Baptist once or for like a couple years, and I was pretty young, so I don't remember that specifically, but it seems like they would always say, you may be seated. Not, like, be seated, you know?
And I don't remember either, and I don't remember how the judge said. I remember during the trial, you're not standing up for the judge, which was curious enough. You're standing up for the jury.
He changed that. That's the thing. He was getting embarrassed or whatever by people not standing for him, because me and Chris Wade, we were standing at first, because you came like a few days in, the first like week or a little less than a week, he was having us, or they would have the like court lady, I don't know who she is, would have us stand for the jury and then be seated. Then, like, a couple minutes would pass of nothing, and then she'd be like, please stand for the honorable court, and the judge would come in, and we'd be standing for him. But me and Chris Wade, we would stand for the jury every time, but not the judge. And I think that that was becoming embarrassing, you know, like, not, he didn't want it that way. So he started just coming in while we were standing for the jury in, like, the second weekend. And that was strategic. He didn't want it to look like people weren't standing for him.
I don't think it was strategic. When my attorney and I were first talking about this, one of the things he said to me when I talked about what a problem it would be for me to stand for the judge is like, well, in federal court, you don't stand up for the judge anyway. You stand up for the jury. So I suspect in those first few cases it was just a mistake or he was running late or something. But according to my attorney, it's always, please rise for the jury.
But she says a second thing. She says, please stand for the jury. And then if he wasn't in the room yet, she normally would say, please stand for the honorable court. And right. Then he'd come in.
Like I said, I suspect he was just running late those days or something. I don't know. I wasn't there for the first few days.
And haven't they not had a case there or an actual trial there in over a year?
Yeah, it was like 2 years.
So maybe she just,
well, not very many,
a little rusty.
I mean, not very many prosecutions actually go to trial.
No.
And it's a mess, but that's the way things work. And I'm not alone being the only one, you know, facing sentencing. Most of the defendants in the Crypto 6 case have already been sentenced, or one of them had their charges dropped. Nobody, that's Rich Paul, was sentenced to time served. Renee was sentenced, I think, to 12 months of probation, and Andy was sentenced to, I think, 18 months, which was strange to me, because they were both, I mean, it's not my call to make, obviously, but their charges were pretty interchangeable, and everything about their circumstances were pretty interchangeable.
Actually, I think that he even had a lower score. You know how they get a score? And that's what was so weird about it to me.
I actually didn't know that. I'm very surprised to hear that he got longer than she did.
He did. by 50% longer, yeah, by 6 months. But yeah, for those who don't know, everyone gets a score. The U.S. government breaks everyone down into a score. The first number is your criminal history, and everyone falls into, I think, there's 5 different categories of this. I don't remember exactly how many categories there are now, but every single American citizen is one of these groups. And then they look at the sentencing, or the whatever it was you were guilty of. I can't think of the term right now, the guidelines.
Okay.
And every single crime has a number associated with it. And that number can vary. Like operating an unlicensed money transmitting business in and of itself, it's like a 2. But you get numbers added to that based on the amounts. Like for up to $10,000, you get 2 added to it. For up to $50,000, you get 4 added to it, and so on. And they calculate all of that. They multiply it by your number, which is based on your criminal history, and then that's your sentencing guideline. And I don't remember now what mine is. I want to say it was 19, but I don't remember off the top of my head. And then you look at that up, and it corresponds to a certain number of months of a sentence. But it doesn't specify whether it's a prison sentence or a probationary sentence, or presumably it could be a mix and match where the judge is like, okay, 36 months, so 2 years in prison and then a year of probation, or 1 year of prison, 2 years of probation. I don't know. There's a huge berth that the judge can choose to go with. So the goal is to mitigate. That's what it's called. It's to come up with reasons why one shouldn't be sentenced to prison, or why the judge should be lenient, or the prosecutor's job to find out why the judge should, you know, drop the hammer and send them to prison. And there's all sorts of things that could influence this one direction or the other. And, of course, my attorney and I are pursuing as many of them as we can possibly think of. The man pulled up my elementary school transcripts. Right,
like, wow,
my elementary school report cards from first grade and kindergarten, and the special notes that the teachers made about whatever. It's exhaustingly exhaustive. And among those other things is seeing a behavioral evaluative, I don't remember the exact terminology, therapist who's going to, you know, evaluate me and give a recommendation. And that's what the cause of the delay at the moment, because this process is evidently taking longer than anyone expected, because there's a lot to go through, evidently. But I'm not alone in facing prospective sentencing. Of course, Ian was found guilty a little over 2 weeks ago, and you can go to letter.freetalklive.com. There's a brief explanation there of what Sisti and Ian are thinking in regard to his sentencing, and what, if you've ever been impacted by Ian, if he's had a positive impact on your life, then go to letter.freetalklive.com and consider writing a letter on his behalf. There's instructions there on what exactly to do with it and what you should and shouldn't include. Like, it's pointless to go off on a libertarian rant against juries or the federal government. Right,
not
whatever.
The time.
Yeah, that's not what's going on here. It's just, has Ian have a positive impact on you? Letters.freetalklive.com or letter.freetalklive.com. Check that out. There's more coming up here, including the first trans person executed by the government. It's Free Talk Live.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
U.S. KSA News Update. There's still no Speaker of the House on day two of the 118th Congress. The House adjourned this afternoon after the sixth round of voting and will reconvene around 8 o'clock Eastern. Republicans remain deadlocked as a group of conservatives continue to deny Kevin McCarthy the votes needed to secure the speakership. Cincinnati Bengals wide receiver T. Higgins is reaching out to Buffalo Bills safety DeMar Hamlin's family. He was involved in the tackle that caused Hamlin to go into cardiac arrest on the field Monday night during the first quarter of the game. Hamlin's friend and marketing representative Jordan Rooney told CNN Hamlin's parents are frustrated with backlash Higgins is getting for the hit. Millions of Californians are bracing for what weather experts are calling a truly brutal storm.
We anticipate that this may be one of the most challenging and impactful series of storms.
I'm Dave Collins, USA News.
Do you need to get your hands on some extra money right now? Maybe $25,000 or more? If you're a homeowner, now is the perfect time to get cash out while homes in many neighborhoods like yours have gone up in value. You can use the money for anything. It's yours. You can buy an investment property, pay off higher interest debt, or make home improvements. If you need $25,000, $50,000, or more, now is the time. Home values are up, and so is your equity. We offer you a way to use it. No need to use your savings. Call New American Funding now and see how much cash out you can get. Call 800-721-2477. 800-721-2477. 800-721-2477. That's 800-721-2477. NMLS 6606. www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org. This is not an offer or commitment to lend. Subject to borrower and property qualifications. Not all borrowers will qualify. Terms and conditions apply. Equal housing opportunity.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
Talk Live, and you are invited to take control of the airwaves, 603-283-6160, if you would like to do that. Again, the number 603-283-6160. With you in the studio tonight, it's Aria,
Nikki,
and Bonnie.
And I want to tell you about amps.freetalklive.com, amps.freetalklive.com. If you value the show and you want, if you support our changes in particular, because we dropped a lot of advertising at the first of the year. We changed the model of the show. As you notice, each segment now is half an hour-ish, give or take a few minutes. You know, there are 6 segments of the show now instead of 12, which means we cut the number of commercial breaks in half. And that's to give you more content. And that also means there's many fewer advertisers now, many fewer opportunities to sell advertising. So really, if you like the show, more importantly now than ever, head on over to amps.freetalklive.com. It stands for Advertise, Market, Promote, and Support. That's our Patreon. So if you value the show and you want us to interact more closely with you on the show and all of that great stuff, the AMPS program is the best way to do it. Instead of having you listen to ads, you can interact with us directly on our Patreon. Presumably you could. I don't ever actually check to see if whether or not we've gotten Patreon messages, but I can start doing that if we were to get Patreon messages. I would check them, you know, just to just to do it. So like we used to get messages on the Facebook page and all of that, but Facebook's a dying social media. Our TikTok's doing pretty well, and you can interact with me and Bonnie there, but Bonnie and I are the only ones who use the TikTok Free Talk Live. So, you know, if you want to interact with Mark or something like that, your options are limited. Patreon presumably could give you that option. Again, no one's checking the Patreon messages, but, you know, if we were getting them, we could. Still, check it out, amps.freetalklive.com. Chris Cohen here is a silver-level amplifier, which means that Chris is giving $5 per month to the program, and that's all we ask. That gets you in, and that gets you access to the podcast. Presumably, previously, it gave you access to the full podcast, but now there's just the podcast again. And now it's just really, if you value the show and you like it, that's the way to do it. Now, I mentioned that we're doing TikTok videos now, and we are. There's actually one from last night's show that I need to clip up, but because it's going to be great, right? Like that part where... Mark said basically the only benefit of doing whatever he said you could live on a different plantation. That was the culmination of Mark.
What's his great plan for escaping the plantation that is the United States? Walk onto another plantation.
Yes. Yeah, but his plantation's better.
Well, yeah, he certainly seems to think so. And you know that was the gist of the conversation last night.
Oh man,
it was a lively conversation where Ian and I both pointed out to Mark accurately that he has completely lost touch with the life of the average person. And he does not understand anymore. Like, Ian said it directly. Dude, you've forgotten where you came from, right?
He's the Kim Kardashian of, you know.
Wasn't she always wealthy, though?
Oh, yeah. Well, she was always wealthy. That's true. But I was just saying, as far as being out of touch, I was going to say he's the Kim Kardashian of Free Talk Live, but you're right. It should be someone who used to be poor. She was like born rich.
Mark, that's just so funny to think of, to compare Mark to Kim Kardashian.
But it's not as inappropriate as you might think. He is completely detached from the suffering of the average person. Right? He legitimately does not understand why the average person can't just up and move to Honduras.
He's Marie Antoinette.
Yeah, let them eat cake, right? And last night we were pointing out, dude, people are living paycheck to paycheck. And then he went straight boomer on everyone. It's not my fault they make bad financial decisions and they choose Starbucks. Okay.
It's like the
avocado toast.
The Paris Hilton shirt, stop being poor.
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever seen that?
I have not.
She's funny. I think that she's, like, purposeless. She's, like... realize she's cognizant of her image, so she wore a shirt that said "Stop being poor." It's really funny.
Paris Hilton did this.
Yeah,
that is awesome.
Yeah, it was like in the early 2000s.
Okay, I'm gonna buy this shirt for Mark.
Right.
I mean, Mark is a great guy. You know, we're laughing at him. He's welcome to call in and defend himself if he wants. He can do that. I mean, he's got special ways to do that, right? Where he doesn't have to just call the phone line, but. He was wrong in this particular subject, and I don't remember how now we got into this particular thing.
Nikki was there when he challenged me to an after show, and then he basically he said that the United States has the right to charge you rent, aka taxes, for living here, even though you were just born here and never agreed to, because they rightly own the United States. And it's just like, I don't understand how some not human entity rightly owns the land I live on, and he didn't have an answer.
Yeah, I don't consent to that.
Yeah.
No, of course not. And I do remember how I got onto this subject, because we're talking about TikTok, because one of the things I'm going to be doing, and that I am doing, is just, I haven't had calls to do it yet, is instead of putting all of these videos to TikTok immediately, some of them will go to Patreon first. And you can watch it there before you can see it. Maybe it'll never go to TikTok. I don't know. We haven't fully decided yet. But, you know, before I put the next video on TikTok, it's going to be available on our Patreon. And then maybe after a few days, I'll actually throw it onto TikTok as well. But some of these will be 100% original content that you've never seen before. Like, I was working on a video recently where a friend of mine had given me this flyer that she received. She lives in the town of Swansea, which is nearby. It was this... Do you know what's in your kids' public library? Sort of flyers, things.
Harry Potter.
It's so Republican. It's worse than that. There's a book called This Book Is Gay, apparently. And I've got to bring this to you just so we can have it here in the studio, because it's remarkable.
Wait, did you get the book?
No.
Oh.
I just got a flyer about the book. Yeah. And presumably, the argument is that no matter how good they raise their kids to be fine, upstanding, God-fearing Christians... One gay book will undo all of that. And that spurred me to create this very short video where I, mimicking a redneck with a country accent, said something to the effect of, what was it? I don't remember now. Johnny was such a good Christian boy. And then he read one of them books, one of them libraries, and now he's a gay woman named Jenny.
Gay woman. Oh, my God.
And so it had that prelude to it where I was discussing this flyer thing and leading into that, like, this is the perspective that Christians seem to be perpetuating, which is that...
Everything's grooming.
Yeah, all of their fine Christian upbringing can just be completely under... Not even by reading this book, right? Johnny didn't have to read this book. He just had to go to the public school that happened to contain it in their library, and that was enough to completely undo everything. Otherwise, what harm is this? If this book is in the library, if Johnny's this fine Christian boy, he won't check out the book in the first place, right? He'll just ignore it. It won't affect him. So.
Or he has, like, the urge to. It's just like, I don't know. It seems to me that he's just gay. If he's just, like, really
possibly.
Interested. But I can literally see my grandma from Alabama referring to, like, a trans woman as gay woman, whatever he said. Like, gay woman in
I just don't understand the thinking behind it, right? Like, if he's straight and he reads this book, it won't make him gay.
Well, and I think they don't understand what being gay really means. Like, if you're straight, you're straight. And if you're gay, you're gay. And, you know, there's, you know, other sexual preferences as well, but...
You would think they would understand this.
The book doesn't change it.
If they're really just, like, a straight dude... Like, every straight dude out there listening to the show right now, if you think you can just be gay if you decide to be, can you imagine yourself kissing another man and being aroused by this and it going anywhere? I mean, you know that wouldn't work, that you would not be aroused, you would not be interested in this, you would be the opposite of interested in this, and you might actually vomit because you're straight, not gay, right? The idea that you can read just a single book or you can just arbitrarily make a decision, well, I don't want to be straight anymore, or Johnny can just make a decision that he just doesn't want to be straight anymore, it's just complete nonsense.
It's, you know where it stems from? The unproven idea that was created like only like two decades ago, that your brain isn't fully developed until you're 25. They think like, oh, your brain's still developing when you're in middle school. I mean, like, it's not that it's not, but it's just like... Your subconscious has been built by the time you're six. Reading a book, if you're not gay, isn't going to make you gay when you're in, like, middle school.
Now, I don't think reading any book at any age is going to make a person gay. This is why I've always stressed to people that, you know, I was wearing the women's clothes and identifying as a woman to the extent that it was possible for me long before I was ever even in kindergarten. Long before the wicked ways of the world had any way of corrupting me and... turning me away from God and convincing me that I'm actually trans and I want to wear women's clothes. Like, long before any of that, I was already trans. And I don't think, I mean, clearly no amount of Christian propaganda and brainwash about how cross-dressing is evil and homosexuality is evil and all of this is spawn of the devil and you've got to be turned against it or you're going to hell. None of that turned me into a straight dude. So how could any of it in the other direction turn someone into
a great point.
That's a great point.
Homosexual?
And to be clear, I wasn't trying to say that it would work if you read the book when you were six or younger. It's just like, I don't think that it's true that everyone's brain is just undeveloped, moldable Play-Doh until they're 25. Stupid.
No, it's curious how malleable people think other people are. Maybe it's projection on their parts, but surely they know that they can't be influenced so easily. Like, you can't slip them subtle... You can't put gay people in their sitcom and eventually it's going to turn them gay, right? Like, surely my grandmother knows that no matter how many gay people she sees on TV, she's not going to wake up one day and be a lesbian. Or does she think that? Or
probably. That's probably why they're so afraid of it.
I honestly don't know, and it's never occurred to me to ask until right now.
There's lots of those people that are like, they find out someone's gay, and they're like, I don't want to be around them.
Like, it's contagious or something.
Contagious, and also just like, they're going to hit on me because I'm a male, and it's just so stupid.
No, don't flatter yourself.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a certifiable fact that bi people don't have any friends. they have only victims. Because, because you can't be attracted to someone of the same gender and then be friends with them. That's just impossible, right? And that's because, too, and I understand where these dudes, because it's always dudes who think that, right?
That's true.
I've never met a girl who's like, I don't want to hang around with that lesbian because she might be attracted to me. It's always dudes having the heebie-jeebies about a gay dude, right? And I understand where they're coming from to an extent, because those are the types of people who are not capable of just being friends with a girl.
Yeah.
Especially if they find that person attractive, because to them, the point of a girl is to get in their pants. And if they're not doing, that's their goal. I pity the girls out there who you read about them and like, you know, yes, getting friend zone sucks, but can you imagine being the girl who you thought this person was your friend for the last 5 years, and it turns out that whole time they were just trying to sleep with you? It's like, God, that's got to suck. But that's the kind of guy who, you know, thinks that a gay person is going to be attracted to him, because to him, every friend out there is just a potential, you know, sex partner, or just a platonic friend because they're the same gender as them or whatever. It's very weird how these people operate. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, one of my ex-best friends was a gay guy, and we would always hang out with this straight guy together, and the straight guy would not drop it, would not believe that the gay guy wasn't actually trans. He was like, you obviously just want to be a woman. And it was just
why would he think that?
It just because
he just didn't understand.
He was gay and like a bottom. He just was like.
LRN.FM.
Man, oh my god, I've never been dumped before until just now.
everyone does it at least once.
Well, I remember how angry he would get, right? Because it pissed him off.
Right.
And like, it is stupid. It's just like, if you don't act exactly the way somebody expects you to, they're like, my brain can't process that. You're obviously trans and want to be a woman. You're not just a regular. I mean, he's like a guy into cars and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Just happened to be like a bottom.
No, I know a lot of gay men that are, they're very masculine, or even if they're not masculine, they're not interested in being a woman. Like, it is possible.
Well, isn't there like a stereotype that most gay men are like working out at the gym and getting really buff and doing hyper masculine things like lifting weights and stuff?
I mean, I think that a lot of people think of like the flamboyant gay men.
Okay.
So if it's like a guy working out at the gym, they're like, oh, well, you must be secretly straight or something.
I know a few, I have met a few of the flamboyantly gay people, but the vast majority of gay people I know are really bisexual. But the few gay people that I know, I just wouldn't peg them as gay. Like, I'm still not convinced some of them are actually gay.
Well, you know what's like so annoying is like, it's what I'm realizing right now is like, so many people won't just take somebody's word for what they are, because it's like, this person, he works out at the gym, he's both things, like, but he, okay, here's the more annoying part.
I don't believe they're gay. I'm not being sincere, by the way, just to point that out.
Yeah.
It's just, like, so shocking that they are. I know some of the people I think that you may be talking about, like, okay, I'm just going to say Chris Wade, I would have never guessed he was gay.
No, absolutely not.
But
I'm like, where is your facial cleanser? And he's like, I don't have any, though. What do you mean you're gay? You have not, there's no facial cleanser anywhere in your house, but you're gay. Okay.
Oh, sure. My gosh. That's interesting, but one thing that was annoying about this best friend, like, I lived with him and everything, because we'd been friends since our birthday when he turned 15 and I turned 17, and people would constantly say that he probably secretly had a crush on me, or that one day we would end up dating, and to me that was so beyond, like, me and him were just both like, ew, no, that's a lesbian. Like, that's what we thought. That's how we felt.
Gotcha.
Like, no way. There's literally no way. And so many people would continuously say that to us. It's like, why can't you just believe someone? I don't know.
Well, see, I mean, speaking of grooming, right? I mean, I'm sure your parents and your family members, your aunt and uncle, I'm sure all of them were like, oh, yeah, it's your future boyfriend.
My mom literally said that all the time.
Well, you're 5 years old.
Yeah.
And this happens all the time. Someone, like, here's a little three-year-old playing with a three-year-old girl. And
talk about the sexualization of children, right?
It's like, no, it's not his little girlfriend. He's three. Can you please calm down and stop sexualizing infants? But no. You want to have a totally normal-ish drag show, and that's unacceptable. But it's totally okay to have this three-year-old, oh, it's this little girlfriend. Okay, well, maybe that little kid's going to grow up to be gay, and now you've caused him, you know, 5 years of therapy that he otherwise wouldn't have to go to because you're cramming him into your heteronormative world.
Well, and that is a good point. I think the straight grooming, I guess I could call it, for lack of a better term, is more detrimental for children than whatever gay propaganda these people think they're being exposed to.
Because it's so
acceptable.
Pervasive?
Well, it's acceptable to be straight, right? But a lot of these people are cramming it into kids' heads, like, if you're gay, you're going to go to hell, and, you know, you can't do this, you can't do that, and I think that is more detrimental for children's mental health, and that's why a lot of gay and trans people struggle with, I mean, everyone probably struggles with their mental health, but I'm sure there's a higher rate of depression and suicide and things like this in people that are gay or trans because of all of the societal pressures and pressures from family and religion and, you know, social norms.
It's just so weird to me that people will have kids and instead of being like excited to find out who this person is, like they want to make the person what they want it to be. Like, it seems like 90% of parents are like that.
Well, they want to live vicariously through their children. You know, it's like a second chance. It's like, well, yep, I screwed up my life, so, you know, it's this.
Let me screw up my kids now.
Yeah, it's like, you better become a doctor, and, you know.
It's you make a good point about the way that straight normalization is just, like, pushed on everyone. Like, I think of the movie The Little Mermaid. Mm-hmm. And it's a totally innocuous movie. I don't mean to pick on the movie, but the Disney movie, it's about a woman being in love with a man. Which is fine, right? Don't get me wrong. However, if you swap that around just a little bit, and I don't know, you make the mermaid black, that's going to upset everyone. But
yeah,
if you do a different thing, and you make her not in love with the man, but in love with the woman, suddenly, oh no, Disney's grooming kids, right? It's grooming kids to have The Little Mermaid be about a woman loving another woman, but it's not grooming if it's a man. And it's just like Christians, where their worldview, Christianity, is so ubiquitous throughout the United States that they literally cannot see it, right? They literally do not see how Christianity has affected the United States. Like, literally a federal holiday has your God's name in it. Christmas, right? And they're like, no, Christians are under attack in the United States. We're losing ground. Atheists control everything, and Christ is getting pushed out of the schools and out of the government, when, like, literally, there has never been an American president who described himself as an atheist. If you describe yourself as an atheist, you're never going to become president. And
well, probably soon, maybe, but not so far.
Maybe, but it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
And it's because Christianity is just pervasive throughout the United States, where you're abnormal for not believing in God. And you say that, and we all automatically think of the Christian God.
Right. It would annoy me so much in, like, middle school. Even when I was a Christian, I would be so confused about when people said that. It's like a really complex thing to describe. Like, people would be like, I don't believe in God, and say something where they would be specifically talking about the Christian God as if that is the God. It was still confusing. It's like, you believe that the Christian God is God, but you don't believe in him. It's so confusing. Well, to me, if I stopped being Christian, that would mean that I stopped believing that the Christian God was God. If you believe the Christian God is God, aren't you scared of going to hell?
Well, I think people, it's just the conditioning. So
yeah,
it's just normalized, because even that's how I feel now. I don't really describe myself as a Christian, but I still think of the Christian God as God just because that's how I was raised.
Yeah.
And it's kind of hard to uncondition yourself from that, you know?
Yeah, it's pervasive throughout the United States, and the straight thing is the same sort of way, where it's everywhere, and it's so common that it's invisible. It's just like a sea of, you know, straight Christians everywhere, and it's so normalized that you look out and you don't see the straight Christians. You see everything else.
Well, and I also want to point out, I was kind of introduced to this because I was talking to one of my coworkers who's from Africa, and she was expressing to me that they still, where she's from, they literally, if you're gay, you will be stoned. Like, they throw rocks at people, and it was just so mind-blowing to me because, you know, I grew up in a family that was totally not homophobic. I had several gay family members. Like, it was just totally normalized. I wasn't exposed to much homophobia as a child.
Yeah.
So just to think of, and she's telling me, she's like, I'm so afraid that my daughter's going to be a lesbian because she's 25 and doesn't have a boyfriend yet and all this stuff. And I was just straight up like, she probably is. What if your daughter is a lesbian? What are you going to do? Are you going to throw rocks at her?
Have you seen
seriously?
Have you seen the Why Are You Gay video from
Yes, well, that's all I could think of. I haven't seen it. That's literally all I could think of when we were having this conversation. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it's so hard to take you seriously. And it was sad. Because I'm like, in other countries, they're still literally murdering people.
And does she think that's better? Like, does she think that's a better way to live? Like,
I don't think she was really, like, condoning it and saying, like, or I don't think she was saying that it was okay, but she was just trying to kind of let me know about where she comes from and how it is over there.
Yeah, but
she was still very disappointed that her daughter might be a lesbian.
My point is just, like, what does she want? Like, does she not realize that will get, that kind of mindset will get you to, you know, one day stoning gay people? Like, obviously it's happened before.
It's just that, you know, that disconnect. People don't get it. They're like, well, you know, I won't kill you, but you still can't be gay. So you have to pretend to be straight and be super depressed your whole life.
Until
and
you
be
kill
miserable.
Yourself.
Oh, yeah, you know what blows my mind, like, the most? Like, I don't understand people who, they don't want there to be just, like, gay pride at all, even if it doesn't affect them. Like, a gay pride parade happened in Keene. I don't know if it was even a parade, because I wasn't there. But it was a gay pride day in Keene, and somebody told me they were upset about it. And the thing that confuses me the most is this: the person had told me that their ex-husband of many years came out as gay and it ruined their family. And,
that's
like,
why.
That sucks, but why don't they understand that if people were allowed to be fine with being gay from the start, they wouldn't have to hide behind an ex or a wife and ruin somebody's life because they were married for, you know, 10 years or whatever, or had kids. Why would it be the opposite? Like, if people aren't allowed to be just main, you know, it doesn't even have to be proud, just like, you know, not ashamed of being gay, then situations like that would not happen.
I agree entirely. I think that we should be more inclined to accept other people as they are and as they present themselves. I don't see what the big problem is with that, but you do absolutely have these people who are like, I can't be friends with that guy. He's gay, or he gives me the heebie-jeebies, or I don't want him to hit on me, or let some guy hit on me, I'll punch him out, you know? It's like, okay, thanks. No one's going to hit on you, though, because you're a disgusting human being. Is the reason that other people are having to hide from themselves. Coming up, what are the feds teaching in diversity training? Whether or not men can get pregnant, that and more, it's Free Talk Live.
If you're like most Americans, you can see things are out of control. Global problems have local consequences, too many of them. And if the next news headline spins us into chaos, you'd better be ready. Grocery store supply chains are only as strong as their weakest link. Don't wait for them to break. Today's the day to secure emergency food for everyone in your family. My Patriot Supply is America's largest preparedness company. Our specially packaged and delicious food stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage. It'll be there when you need it. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and pick up several emergency food kits. There are a dozen different sizes that average over 2,000 calories per day. As we all know, calories equals energy equals survival. And as you'd expect from a true preparedness company, our food kits are in stock and ship quickly. Those who know what's coming are preparing today. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Have you heard the warning from the dead doctors don't lie guy? I'm talking about Dr. Joel Wallach. He says if you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol or high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, or other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. That's what he says. He has a free lecture revealing what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. And it's all in his free lecture called Deadly Recipe. You want it free? Call him toll free at 855-79-YOUNG. You ready? 855 7'9", young. Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy, says there's no reason why we shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there.